Okay, so we begin the sutta class. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassami. So today we are doing this Upaklesa Suttas. There's in English, there's an imperfection. This Upaklesa actually is the subtle hindrances that do the. Actually, I just give you the gist of this. This suttas is all about what it's all about. Actually, the first half is about how, you know, the Buddha's having, you know, when he's staying in at Gosombi, and that they have this dispute and they have to leave. And that part maybe I just read, and if you really need to stop me, you can stop me. But we focus more on the second part, on how to deal with when you have limita appears, you know. Because especially those having limita appears, that is, and the lights appear, then how you deal with it, so that you be able to go further, so that you be able to attain jhana, in the jhana state. So this is the second part is more of all the hindrances come out. So the hindrances that you know that because when a limiter appears, actually your mind is pretty pure, but still you overcome lots of gross hindrances gone. Like for example, the sensual desires, that is a gross one gone. You know, like even though you have the limiter stage, you still have those hindrances, but it's the subtle, refined. Hindrances is not the gross, it's not like when we talk about sloth and torpor or restlessness, and it's not the kind of restlessness like people can't sit still even for 5 minutes. That is very gross type. This is like the mind just not be able to really focus, you know. That is a very subtle. Actually, when you come to nimitta state, actually your mind is pretty, you know, you have to focus, but only close to jhanas, you know. So that's why if you appear the limita and how to take to further to attain jhana, how to deal with it, what are the hindrances will appear, you know, when at the limita stage. So I will just read out the first part, then the second part, how to deal with the hindrances, and I'll be focused much more on that. So, thus have I heard on the occasion, the blessed one was living at Gosombi in Gosita Park. Now on that occasion, the bhikkhus at Gosombi had taken to quarreling and brawling and were deep in disputes and stabbing each other with barber daggers. So this is what the monks did. Huh? Sometimes, you know, even they're enlightened, but they're still not free of development yet. You know, they're still, you know, they're still human, okay? Then certain bhikkhus went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he stood at one side and said, "Venerable Sir, the bhikkhus here at Kosambi have taken to quarreling and brawling and are in deep disputes, stabbing each other with barber daggers. It would be good, Venerable Sir, if the Blessed One would go to those bhikkhus out of compassion." The Blessed One consented in silence. Then the Blessed One went to those bhikkhus and said to them, "Enough, bhikkhus, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or disputes." When this was said, a certain bhikkhu said to the Blessed One, "Wait, Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One, the law of the Dharma, live at ease, devoted to the blessing abiding here and now. We are the one who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute." So in another way, he just said that this is none of your business. So this is our business. We are doing the quarreling. So none of your business. You go back to meditate. You know, it's none of your business. So for a second time, for a third time, the Blessed One said, "Enough, you know, bhikkhus, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or disputes. And for a third time, the bhikkhu said to the blessed one, again, he said, really none of your business, you know. Wait, Venerable Sir. So he said, we are, then, you know, he repeating, you know, that, you know, we are the one who will be responsible for this quarreling, brawling, wrangling, and dispute. So he said, okay, you go back to your own abiding and meditate, you know, and this is really none of your business, you know. When the Buddha said first time, second time, so the third time also said, they told the Buddha, this is really none of your business. So then, when it was morning, blessed one, then the Buddha said, what can he do, you know? So he mind his own business, so he just left them. Then when it was morning, the blessed one dressed and taking his bow and outer robe, enter Kosambi for alms. When he had wandered for alms in Kosambi and had returned from his alms round, after his meal, he set his resting place in order, took his bow and outer robes, and was standing outer distances. So he said, when many voices shout at once, none considers himself a fool. Though the Sangha is being split, none thinks himself to be at fault, isn't it? Everybody thinks that's all right. You see, shouting at each other. They have forgotten thoughtful speech. They talk obsessed by words alone. Uncurbed their mouth, they bow at will. None knows what leads him so to act. He abused me, he struck me, he defeated me. He robbed me. In those who harbor thoughts like this, hatred will never be allayed. I think this is a very famous saying in the Dhammapada, isn't it? So if people keep thinking, you know, this person, how bad, you know, this is, you know, that is like the Buddha said, you know, your anger will never be appeased by anger. He abused me, he struck me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who do not harbor thoughts like this, hatred will readily be allayed. For this world, hatred is never allayed by further acts of hate. It is allayed by non-hatred. That is the fixed and ageless law. Those others do not recognize that here we should restrain ourselves. But those wise ones who realize this at once end all their enmity. Breakers of bones and murderers, those who steal cattle, horses, wealth, those who pillage the entire realm, when even these can act together, why can't you not do so too? Why can you not do so too? If one can find a worthy friend, a virtuous, steadfast companion, then overcome all threats of dangers and walk with him content and mindful. But if one finds no worthy friends, no virtuous, steadfast companion, then as a king leaves his conquered realm, walk like a tusker in the woods alone. Better is walk alone, that is no companionship with fool. Walk alone and do no evil, at ease like a tusker in the woods. So that means that if you don't have a good friend, you know, you rather not to have one. Because you associate with the fool, you become fool as well, isn't it? Get affected. So then, you know, how we get influenced, and then that's why he said, if you don't have good friends, then it's rather not to have. Then having other distances, while standing, the Blessed One went to the village, Palaka Nolakara. On that occasion, the Venerable Bhagu was living at the village, Palaka Nolakara. When the Venerable Bhagu saw the Blessed One coming in the distance, he prepared a seat and set out water for washing the feet. The Blessed One sat down on the seat, make ready and wash his feet. The Venerable Bhagu paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side. And the Blessed One said to him, I hope you are keeping well, Bhikkhu. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food. I'm keeping well, Blessed One. I'm comfortable. I'm not having any trouble getting alms food. Then the Blessed One instructed, urged, roused, and gladdened The Venerable Bhikkhu with talks on Dharma, after which he rose from his seat and went to the eastern bamboo park. Now on the occasion, Venerable Anuruddha, the Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbala were living at the eastern bamboo park. The park keeper saw the Blessed One coming in the distance and told him, "Do not enter this park recluse. There are three clansmen here seeking their own good. Do not disturb them." You see, the gatekeeper don't recognize the Buddha. You see, that's why that you know, someone really enlightened, they will never show off that I'm enlightened. Look, I'm special. I'm, you know, extraordinary. So the Venerable Anuruddha heard the park keeper speaking to the Blessed One, because he heard his the Buddha's voice, you know, and he can recognize the Buddha, and told him, "Friend park keeper, do not keep the Blessed One out. It is our teacher, the Blessed One, who has come." Then Venerable Anuruddha went to the Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbala and said, "Come out, Venerable sirs, come out. Our teacher, the Blessed One, has come." Then all three went to meet the Blessed One. One took his bowl and outer robe, one prepared a seat, and one set up water for washing the feet. The Blessed One sat down on the seat, make ready, and wash his feet. Then those three Venerable Ones pay homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side. And Blessed One said to them, "I hope you all are keeping well, Anuruddha. I hope you're comfortable. I hope you are not having any trouble getting alms food." Then Anuruddha replied that, "We are keeping well, Blessed One. We are comfortable and we are not having any trouble getting alms food. I hope, Anuruddha, that you are all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Surely, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. But Anuruddha, how do you live thus?" He said, how can you live like that, you know, harmoniously together? So the Buddha want to know how they be able to live harmoniously together, no dispute, no quarreling. So he said, "Venerable Sir, so as to that, I think this. It's a gain for me that I'm living with such companions in the holy life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards these Venerable Ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what these Venerable Ones wish to do? Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what these Venerable Ones wish to do. We are different in body, Venerable Sir, but one in mind." The Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbala each spoke likewise, adding, "That is how, Venerable Sir, we are living in concord with mutual appreciations, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes. Good, good, Anuruddha. I hope that you all abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute." There is, when the Buddha said abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute, that means that you are really, you are meditating, you know, like then surely, Venerable Sir, we abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. But Anuruddha, how do you abide this? So it's like, okay, yes, you're meditating, you know. So how's your meditation? How do you abide this? He said, "Venerable Sir, so do that. Whichever of us, you know, first come from the village with alms food prepared for the seat, set out." Because they said it's so important when he said that you be able to live harmoniously together, because it's so important, it's support your meditation. Imagine if you live in an environment, isn't it? Not harmonious. You know, how come you be able to abide, you know, to be able to meditate? You can't, isn't it? So much quarreling, you know, and then after quarrel, you try to get and sit, it's keep repeating, isn't it, what the person said. So they said, this is how they said, how, you know, that, how do you abide this, you know? So he said, Brahma, sir, as to that whichever of us returns first from the village with alms food, prepares the seat, set out the water for drinking and for washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place. Whichever of us returns last eats any food left over, if he wishes. Otherwise, he throws it away where there is no greenery or drops in it into water where there is no life. He puts away the seat and the water for drinking and for washing. Puts away the refuse bucket after washing it, and he sweeps out refectory. Whoever noticed that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or the latrine are low or empty, takes care of them. If they are too heavy for him, he calls someone else by signal of hand, and they move it by joining hands. But because of this, we do not break out in the speech. But every 5 days, we sit together all night discussing the Dharma. That's how we abide diligently, ardent, and restful. So that's how, like, throughout, they don't have to talk so much, you know. They know each other, and, like, they're not, like, calculative, you know. So how much you do, how much I do. So that, you know, someone do this, I will do that, you know. They say, I know sometimes in some community, they're so calculating, that they're discounting, you know, so very calculative, you know. I have to distribute, the work have to be equally. Sometimes it's very difficult, isn't it? If you see what someone doing that, you have to do that, isn't it? So if someone filled up the water, then you have to empty the water, you know. So just, you know, don't have to speak a lot, and we don't have to be so calculative, you know, that who did more, maybe I do more, the other person do less, you know. Then how come you be in you know, live in harmony like that, isn't it? So you don't have the peace of mind. And this is how they look with each other, you know, with kindly eyes, with loving eyes, caring eyes, you know. So that's why they maintain their mindfulness throughout. So when you maintain your mindfulness throughout, once you meditate, it's easier. Imagine if you get involved so much in the talking, then your mindfulness break, isn't it? So that's why it's important, even in daily life, you can do that. Try to focus on one thing. Try to do one thing. Try to maintain that. Because some people think that they try to separate that daily life with meditation. And then afternoon, the mind all over the place. And then they think that after that, they can just sit and meditate and go into deep meditation. You can't, isn't it? So it's important that we try to maintain that throughout, you know, our life in afternoon and daily life. So good, Anuruddha. But while you abide thus, diligent, ardent, and resolute, have you attained any superhuman states and distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of noble ones, a comfortable abiding? So actually it means that, have you attained jhanas? Have you attained enlightenment? You know, the jhanas, enlightenment. So that is attained enlightenment, that is you already abandoned the three asavas, is the outflows of the mind, the desires to be, and also the ignorant. So, and then to understand the Four Noble Truths, you know, into the accomplish the insight that is attained the Nibbana. So he said, good, Andara, but what you're abiding, okay. Then he said, Venerable Sir, as we abide here diligent, ardent, and resolute, we perceive both lights and visions of forms. Soon afterwards, the light and vision of forms disappear, but we have not discovered the cause for that. He said, when we meditate, so that nimitta appear. The nimitta actually is the reflection of our mind. So as you have the purity, if you have less and less defilement, then you don't have, your mind is bright. So it's the lights come. So they can see this form is not the physical eye seeing, the mind seeing the in the form of light. That the mind seeing that is in the mind. So then he said that because soon after the limiter appear, and it's very quick, it just disappear. So they don't know why the cause of that, the limiter cannot stay. So then the Buddha said, you should discover the cause for that anuruddha. Before my enlightenment, while I was still only an enlightened bodhisattva, I too perceived both light and vision of forms. Soon after the light and the visions of form disappear, I thought, what is the cause and condition? Why the lights and the visions of forms have disappeared? Then I considered thus. Doubt arose in me, and because of the doubt, my concentration fell away. Then my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of form disappeared. I shall so act that doubt will not arise in me. So he said when he was still a bodhisattva, an enlightened bodhisattva. So then when that's happened, then he knows that, okay, he knows that this is because he got doubts aroused in him. So that the doubts are, you're not sure whether this is limita or not animita, you know. So then, because once you think, the mind move, so the limita disappear. So here the Buddha said like how you should like program your mind. You program your mind that okay, next time the limita comes out, you know, that then you're aware that you know that okay, I have doubt. For example, you say, oh, when this comes out again, so you will program your mind is that when this comes out, I no longer act, you know, appoint this to do that again, have doubt, you know, abandon the doubt, you know. So then he said, the way the Buddha said you program the mind is not that you have to keep repeating and like memorizing, you don't memorize it, you know, try to memorize, you know, make sure that no doubt, you know, if the doubt come in, you don't do that. Actually, it's like programming the mind. You give a very clear instruction telling the mind, you know, that when this happens, this is doubt. So I just keep going, that knowing that this is doubt, you know, not to act upon the doubt, you know, keep starting to think what is this, whether it's limita or not. So that's why to program the mind, actually it's just like, for example, like you listening to the talks now, listening to the sutta class, we talk about that. I remember last time when I read one sutta, it's about how to overcome fear. So and that time when I read the suttas, because I was fully very attentive and really mindful and really fully reading that suttas, then after reading that, I don't remember that, I forgot, you know. But when that time I've experienced that fear and this pops up, oh, I remember, this is what the Buddha said. If the fear come, if you are walking, you continue walking. If you are sitting, you continue sitting. You just maintain that posture. Actually, you don't have to keep memorizing. It will pop up. When you have a clear instruction, it's like programming the mind. So you can only do that when you are really attentive, you know, like fully attentive and mindful. Because part of the mindfulness is that you be able to remember. So if you are sitting here, yeah, even though we listen, but you are not really here. So then it's really don't go in. Some people think that they keep telling themselves, you know, like for example, sometimes they're repeating the same mistake. Then they keep telling themselves off, you know, I told you already how many times you shouldn't do it. And then, you know, and actually sometimes when you do that, it becomes like having expectation. Yourself is different from reprogramming, you know, you have that expectation, shouldn't do it, you know. Then sometimes, like, you know, you expect yourself not to have that. Then the expectation come from the craving, the mind, you know. So it's a different type. It's not, it's like you're programming the mind that, you know. So actually, you don't have to memorize it. It will pop up by itself when you need it, okay? So, As As Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute, I perceived both light and vision of forms. Soon after the light, the vision of forms disappeared. I thought, what is the cause and condition why the light and the vision of form have disappeared? Then I considered thus. Inattention arose in me, and because of inattention, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of the form disappeared. I shall act that neither doubt nor inattention will arise in me again. So then the inattention, actually, that you're not be able, not attentive, like not you not be able to really attend to the, like the minute limiter comes up, you know. So you not be able to really focus, attend to the, not attentive. So that's why sometimes it's important, like throughout, you know, the day, we have to practice, you know, the be able to focus, to be able to attend, you know, to the stay with the limiter. So he said, so as Anuruddha, so he will repeat, you know, I was abiding diligent, ardent, and resolute. I considered the slot and topper arose in me. And because of slot and topper, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention nor slot and topper will arise in me. So the slot and topper come from the mind is down. Is not bright enough. So that's why the mindfulness is not empowered, not powerful enough yet. So that's why it have the dullness. So that's why sometimes it's important that is our daily life that you see empower our mindfulness. So as Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, resolute, I considered this. Fear arose in me. And because of fear, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the visions of form disappeared. Suppose a man set out on a journey and murderers leaps out on both sides of him, and fear would arise in him because of that. So too, fear aroused in me. The light and the visions of forms disappear. I consider this, I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor slot and topper, nor fear will arise in me. So because of sometimes that when we are not familiar with that, when something that is that we like sometimes like the lexus come out, we say, oh, what is this? Sometimes maybe things that we don't know, we have that because of the sense of self, because of the attachment that we attach to what we know, what we're familiar with. When we move to something that unknown, something that we don't know, that's why a lot of people, when they enter in the jhanas, when they feel that they don't feel the body, they say, oh, you know, they think that, you know, they're so scared because they're so attached to what they used to be familiar with, you know, because this is something experience that you never experience, you never see. You say, what happened? What is this like, you know? And because that fear, the fear come from, the attachment come from, you know, that we don't know what we are hating towards, you know. This is why most people, you know, rather holding on to the non, you know, what they're familiar with than to hate towards to the unknown, because to them, like, that losing the sense of self, you know, you don't have the security, you're really scared. So that's why to overcome this fear, actually, it's good to develop that perception of non-self. That is, you know, nothing to lose. We don't own it. It's not belongs to us. And also maybe develop the familiarity with that. Maybe next time comes out, you know, be brave, you know, maybe, you know, it's just like the baby with testing the water, you know, little by little, you know, then to familiar with this limiter when it comes out. So, and also, you know, that it's also useful also that develop the perception of non-self, like it's like, you know, nothing to, because it's come from the sense of self, you know, because the attachment of what we're familiar with, when we move into something that we don't know, then we have that fear. So we move down to 20. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, I considered thus. Elation arose in me, and because of elation, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and vision of forms disappeared. Suppose a man seeking one entrance to a hidden treasure came all at once upon five entrances to a hidden treasure. So the elations that arise in him because of that, so too elation arose in me, the light and the vision of form disappear. It's considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, slot and torpor, nor fear, nor elations will arise in me again. So this is elation that is like excitement. Like some people, they see a little bit like, I have limiter, finally I get limiter, very excited. So when you're excited, gone, isn't it? So excited, you move, because because the excitement is stir the mind. Like people, they're longing for limiter, at last I have limiter. And so happy when the limiter come, so excited. I remember I met someone in Thailand that when she attend a retreat, you know, and then the teacher always will announce how many percent people are having have limita, you know. And then she didn't have limita. And then she was very upset. She was thinking that I'm really stupid. But it seems that everyone have limita. I'm the only one don't have one, you know. So she tried harder. She tried very hard until she have chest pain and until she can't breathe, you know. Then I told her, and then she said, I cannot, she had to withdraw from the retreat. Then I told her, I said, you don't meditate to get nimitta. You will never get nimitta if you want to get it. You know, it's come from letting go, isn't it? Because this is the hindrances is desires, you know. So if you want it, you have the desires, you will never get it if you want it. I said, you know, you don't. It's come from the letting go, you know. The more you let go, the deeper you go. If you can't let go, the causal defilements is very difficult to go deep, you know. So they say, and she tried so hard. The harder she tried, the worse, you know. She said to a point like she feel like she can't breathe. She can't breathe because she tried hard. Her chest very tight, and she have a lot of pain in her chest. And after that, she said she can't even breathe. Then she have to stop meditating, trying too hard. So they said the excitement, yes, because you stir the mind. So, and it's also for overcome this excitement, it's also good to also to develop this perception of non-self. Like, you know, this is, we don't own this. Why we're so excited? No need to be so excited. It doesn't belong to us anyway. It's non-self anyway, you know, to develop that kind of perception of non-self. So then there's a 21. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent, resolute, I considered thus. Inertia arose in me, and because of inertia, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, slot and torpor, nor elations, nor inertia will arise in me again. So this inertia is like heaviness. You feel heavy. Because trying too hard, it's just like I just now tell you the example, like my friend trying too hard. So it's all heavy. It become her chest is so tight because of trying so hard. So you feel heaviness, isn't it? When you try too hard, you feel so, you don't feel light. When you let go, you feel light, isn't it? So when you try to get things, you try so hard, you know, try to get, why my limiter is not here? Oh, I want my limiter, I want it, you know. And then you try, maybe I don't focus enough. So after that, and then you become like heavy. The heaviness comes from the tension, too much tension, trying too hard. So that's why you have to relax a little bit, because it's have to, actually this one, the nimitta will not appear, you know, by wanting it, you know. It's only appear by, you know, you remove the impurity of your mind, you know. That's why sometimes it's so important, you know. That's why this is the noble four path, you know. That's why how you live your life, keeping your precept, you know, restraint. So you have to remove some of so gross, you know, defilement first, you know. So because the mind is bright, you have the limita. Actually, it's because of come from the purity is bright. So that's why trying too hard to get nimitta. So that's why you feel, you know, so the moment you get the nimitta, it won't stay long because it's come out and then you think, oh, nimitta comes up, maybe I try harder to hold it, and then you get heavy, you have the heaviness. So as Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, restless, I considered this excess of energy aroused in me, and because of excess energy, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the visions of form disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quill tightly with both hands, it would die then and there. So too, an excess of energy arose in me, and the light and the visions of form disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that earlier, neither doubt nor inattention slow and topper, nor inertia nor excess of energy will arise in me. As Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, and I finished the 23rd one. First time only I explained that. As I was abiding diligent, I considered thus deficiency of energy arose in me, and because of deficiency of energy, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the visions of form disappeared. Suppose a man were to grip a quill loosely and it would fly out of his hand. So too, a deficiency of energy rose in me. The light and the visions of form disappeared. I considered thus, I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, sloth and torpor, nor excessive of energy, nor deficiency of energy will arise in me. I think elation also, and inertia also. I don't repeat. So now they talk about excessive energy and deficient energy. That's when the limiter appear, sometimes we holding too tight. We say, oh, that means so that we use too much energy, too much to try to hold it, you know. So when you try to hold too hard, so the nimitta will disappear. Actually, it's not actually not the nimitta move. Actually, it's our mind move, because when you try too much, you know, to try to hold too hard. So you cannot hold too hard. It's just nice, you know, the nimitta. It's just enough to be able to just focus, but not too much, you know. Too much energy, excessive energy, like holding too hard. So then neither, they said, deficiency energy, that means like too loose. Like too loose, you know, then it fades away, you know. But you have to be just nice. You be able to really focus. But if too loose, then you're not really you're not that focused. Then it's so go away, you know. So you have to be just like he said, just nicely hold it, just nice, not too hard. Try to hold it and not too loose like that. So it's just nicely, the nimitta holding it. Then the nimitta can stay. So he said neither excessive energy nor deficiency energy. That means that you don't hold the nimitta too hard or too loose, too tight. Sometimes we try to hold too tight. We afraid the nimitta will go away, so we try to hold it very tight. So it's too tight. So you have to. Then too loose also, the nimitta also fade away. So too tight, the nimitta also fade away. So the 24th. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent, resolute, I considered thus. Longing arose in me, and because of that longing, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention slur on top of, and what else, and in nature, and so on. I don't repeat that, okay? So, nor longing, so a deficiency of energy, nor longing will arise in me again. So this longing is like you expectation, the wanting the nimitta so much. So because of your expectation, you wanting so much, because whenever we crave, the mind move. Because the mind move. Actually, sometimes people keep saying that, oh, my, the limiter move, the limiter go. Actually, it's not the limiter move. Actually, it's our mind move. So when we crave, the mind move. Once you move, the limiter, because the limiter is actually is the reflection of the mind. So when your mind move, that's why the limiter disappear. So they say it's because of we longing so much, you know, I want, you know. Sometimes, but this longing, like this wanting, this desires is not the gross, like sensual desires, you know, but this is a very subtle desires that you wanting to have nimitta, expecting, come from the expectation, come from the craving. So on this go to 25th. As Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, I considered thus. Perception of diversity arose in me. And because of perception of diversity, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt nor inattention, slow on top and so on, nor longing, nor perception of diversity will arise in me again. So perception of diversity, that's like when you focus on the nimitta, is a light. So rather than you just focus in the center, focus in the middle, you try to look at the side. When the side, then you can see whether the nimitta is big or round or square or, you know, what color. So it becomes like diversity. So you are not centered, you are not synchronous, you are not focused, you are not a one-pointedness, so you are not focused in the middle. So actually, when the limiters comes out, actually you look at the right in the middle, and zoom in, but not to look at, try to look at the side. When you look at the side, you can see all the shape, isn't it? Like I know some people said to me that the limiters, you know, they try to look at the color, and some people tell me the limiters like transparent, you know. So actually, you don't focus on that. That becomes a diversity, isn't it? You look at the shape, you look at whether is what color, you know, red, blue, yellow, you know. Actually, even you practice casina, even blue casina, you know, whatever casina. Actually, eventually, this comes up the blue light. Actually, you focus on the light. You don't focus on the color. It's the light. Even with the fire casina, you don't focus on the fire, the flame is comes up, that limited the flame. You focus in the middle of the light. You know the flame come out, so that is the brightest one in the middle, the brightest one. You focus that, but not try to look at the whole limited, the whole shape. You know, so this becomes like diversity. So you lack of that. Singleness, lack of that one-pointedness. That's why it's so important that, you know, daily life, you practice that. I know some people, they're happy in their life, you know. They just do a bit of, you know, reflections, and then they're happy, and or they try to develop contentment. Oh, how lucky I am. I'm staying here. Oh, I'm so wonderful. I inspire. Yes, but you never go deep. You always because have to go to try to develop that, you know, one-pointedness, focus. Whatever you do, you focus. So if you do like that, you never go deep. So you just, the kind of happiness actually is very superficial type of, you know, is different type of happiness if you're in deep state, you know, that is not the bliss up type. It's, oh yeah, a bit happy, peaceful. So then the mind is scattered. Your mind is scattered all over the place. It's not one pointedness. They say it's so important in daily life when we work. So we sweep, make sure we sweep. Then sometimes people sweep and look, oh, what is that? Oh, what is that? Come back, sweep. Oh, what is that? Oh, is that? You know? Then you never develop that. So they say some, I know some people avoid, they don't like to go with the breath because they find it difficult to focus. But you have to train them. The mind need to be trained. You train the mind. Even though, you know, you start training your mind to focus, even though your mind wander off many times, you keep bringing back, keep bringing back. Even though you keep bringing back, even sometimes you cannot focus long, but you already develop that one-pointedness, singleness, isn't it? You start to develop that. But if you don't start to do that, you keep doing that, you always so superficial, never go deep. So it doesn't matter. Like I know some people don't like to focus on one thing. They like to do like reflection, to develop contentment, you know, to do that, you know. So it's actually it's not that it's bad, you know, but you can never go deep, you know. So you have to train yourself, you know, to that one-pointedness, the mind have to focus. Whatever you do, you are very attentive, you're fully there. Whatever you do, actually, that really strengthen your mind. Your mind. Your mind is very steady. That is the inner stability. If not, your mind will be, like people like that, the mind is very scattered, so then they very easily draw in outside, you know, when outside, whatever, like other people emotion or whatever, that because the lack of the inner stability, they just, because the mind is scattered, the mind is not steady. So that's like you have to train our mind in daily life, you know, even though we find it difficult to focus, doesn't matter. Start to train your mind doing that. Even your mind keep wander off 1,000 times, 100 times, how many thousand times, keep bringing it, keep bringing back, you know, that actually you develop the strength, you know. You have to keep doing that. You have to develop that. Okay. So now we go to 26. So as Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, I considered this excessive meditation upon forms arose in me, and because of excessive meditation upon forms, my concentration fell away. When my concentration fell away, the light and the visions of form disappeared. I shall so act that neither doubt, nor inattention, nor perception of diversity, nor excessive meditation upon form will arise in me. This is that you start to reflect, like investigate, because like you, when then, because you excessive too much, that's why we do not encourage people to try to reflect and investigate. You only investigate and reflect after the meditation. Like for example, after jhanas, that you have that time, you reflect. You don't try to investigate when the nimitta comes out. This is not the time, because the moment you reflect, you know, you investigate, actually your mind's move again. So you miss it, isn't it? The mind move. So that because of excessive, you know, reflection, not investigation. So that's not the time to reflect or investigate. So you have to, so that's why you program the mind. So next time the nimitta come out, make sure I don't reflect. I just stay with that, you know. So then 27. When Anuruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind. I abandoned doubt. Then when I abandoned doubt, an imperfection in and imperfections of the mind. When I understood that, inattention, sloth and torpor, fear, elation, inertia, excessive of energy, deficiency of energy, longing, perception of diversity, excessive meditations upon forms, is an imperfections of mind. I abandoned excessive meditation forms upon forms and imperfections of the mind. As Anuruddha, I was abiding. So he said, when I be able to abandon this imperfection, this subtle, refined hindrances. So he said, as Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and resolute. I perceived light, but I did not see forms. I saw forms, but I did not perceive light. Even for the whole night, or a whole day, or a whole day and night, I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? When I considered thus, on the occasion when I do not attend to the sign of form, but attend to the sign of light, then I then perceive the light, but do not see form. On the occasions when I do not attend to the sign of light, but attend to the sign of forms, then I see the forms, but do not perceive light. Even for a whole night, a whole day, or a whole day and night, as Anuruddha, I was abiding, diligent, ardent, and restless. I perceive limited light and saw limited forms. I perceive limited immeasurable lights and saw immeasurable forms. Even for a whole night, a whole day, or a whole day and night, I thought, what is the cause and condition for this? Then I considered thus, on the occasion when concentration is limited, my vision is limited, and with limited vision, I perceive limited light and limited forms. But on the occasion when the concentration is immeasurable, my vision is immeasurable, and with immeasurable vision, I perceive immeasurable light and see immeasurable forms. And even for the whole night, for a whole day, or a whole day and night. So, actually, this is when they said that I can see the form. And when they see lights and not seeing the form, actually that is not the focus. They can see the light. That means the light is scattered. Is the focus is not enough. That's why it's scattered. So that's why you have to develop the samadhi. So the samadhi to be able to stay. So then the people to see the form but not the light actually is that the mindfulness, the energy is not enough. So the energy actually is empowered by mindfulness. You have to have a strong mindfulness, because when you have strong mindfulness, you have energy, isn't it? So in this Noble Four Path, so you have sila, samadhi, panya. So the sila, that is a cultivation. The sila is the morality, and then the samadhi actually is the cultivation of the mind. So the cultivation of the mind, you have to have a samadhi. You have to have be able to focus the focus. Then you have to have energy, virya, and then mindfulness. So when they talk about the other one, when they talk about the limited light and limited form and immeasurable light and immeasurable form, that means when our samadhi is very, when our mindfulness is very strong, super duper mindfulness, so then it's very bright. Isn't it? When we have a strong mindfulness, our mind is very bright. It's like you turn on a very bright light, like a flat light, you know, it's just shine on you. But those when your samadhi is not, when your mindfulness is not that strong, it's not, so then it's just like the light is just like, you know, maybe 15 watt, 20 watt, it's just not powerful. So that's why these three come together, become powerful. So that's why the cultivation of the mind, you have to have the virya, the energy to sustain. You have to have the samadhi, you have to be able to have the focus, the synchronous, the one-pointedness, and you have the super-duper mindfulness. Then this is the samadhi, the jhana, you have to have this. So you can, if you have only samadhi, it's not, if just the focus is not good enough. you know, you have to have powerful mindfulness, powerful mindfulness, and also you have to the energy to keep going, you know, that you be able to stay on the object for long. And because when you have the energy, you don't, for example, when we have the strength, isn't it? It's easy for us to live, isn't it? When we don't have the strength, we struggle. We don't have the energy, we struggle, isn't it? So when you have the energy, it's so easy, isn't it? And your mindfulness, it's so bright. Your mindfulness is so powerful. Super duper mindfulness is so bright. And your focus is so easy to focus. And then you have the energy, it's so easy. Then you can stay, you have the strength to go further, to go deep, to endure the jhana state. So then we come to 30. So when Anuruddha, I understood that doubt is an imperfection of the mind and have abandoned doubt and an imperfection of the mind. When I understood that inattention is an imperfection of mind and I had abandoned inattention, and have abundance on top of, abandon fear, abandon elation, abandon inertia, abandon excess of energy, abandon deficiency of energy, abandon longing, abandon perception of diversity, abandon excessive meditation upon forms, and imperfection of the mind. Then I thought I have abandoned those imperfections of the mind. Let now develop concentration in three ways. So now, you move into the jhana state because they have abandoned the subtle, those refined hindrances. So then the limitta is really very, very stable. So that's when after the limitta state, then you come into that, they call it the jhana state, the first jhana, second jhana, and third jhana. So they said, when Anuruddha, I understood, So thereupon, Anuruddha, I developed concentration with apply. Actually, because this is the translation, they said apply thoughts and sustain thoughts. Actually, it's not thinking. It's just like they said, like you be able to apply, like be able to apply your mind, you know, onto the object and be able to sustain, to keep it onto the object. So it's not that the thinking, you know, when he said, you know, then you can apply the mind. I develop concentration without apply. Then that is the first jhana. That is the first jhana. That is you be able to apply your mind, focus on your mind, onto the object, and you be able to sustain. Be able to sustain that. So after that, he said, when you move into this is how you move. You move into second and third and the fourth jhana. So after that, he said, I develop concentration without applied thoughts, but with sustained thoughts only. So then after that, when you're getting more steady, you know, so you don't have to try to apply. You just easily, you just be able to sustain. So this is how you keep letting go. So that letting go of the applied thoughts, you know, because you get steadier. Because at the beginning, the mind still try to move towards and try to, you know, focus on that. But when you move, you know, you go deeper, as you establish your concentration, then actually you don't have to try to focus, try to move the object, you know, you just sustain. So that letting go of the sustained, the mind be able to sustain. So then he said, I develop concentration with applied mind, but with sustained mind only. I develop concentration without applied thoughts, and without sustained thoughts. So now you don't have to, because the mind is really steady. So you move into the second jhana, that is you develop the mind with rapture. Then you let go because it's so steady. You don't have to try to sustain. You don't have to sustain. You don't have to try to move. But your mind is just with rapture. You develop rapture. So I develop concentration with rapture. So I develop concentration without After that, you know, I develop concentration without rapture. I develop concentration accompanied by enjoyment. That is, this is the five jhana factors. That is, apply the mind, be able to apply the mind, sustain the mind. Then you come into the rapture, pity, we call it pity. Then you let go of the pity. Then you go, you develop the joy, the sukha, you know. So I develop concentration accompanied by equanimity. So then even that, the joy, you see, because you also let go. So then you come into the fourth jhana, that your mind is completely still. Because with rapture, with sukha, there's still tiny bit, you know, that is not, because you still have that a tiny bit, you know, it's very, very subtle. Then when you come to, this is a complete stillness. There is a fourth jhana. That is that accompanied by equanimity. It is equanimity. So when Anuruddha, I have developed concentration with applied thoughts and sustained thoughts. When I have developed concentration accompanied by equanimity, the knowledge and the vision arose in me. My deliverance is unshakable. This is my last birth. Now there is no renewal of beings. So when he said that, it doesn't mean that you have your jhana, then you enlighten. So because in these suttas, it focus about how to get into jhana. So this is the focus. So that's why he didn't, and then this is the focus. Doesn't mean that after jhana, you enlighten. So because you have to make use of that state, the jhana state, to penetrate into the law of karma, the three characteristics, the dependent originations, the four noble truth, you penetrate to. It's not the kind of thinking, it's not concept, you know, because our mind is clouded. So whatever we see, what we perceive, actually we are not perceived purely. It's always we add on or perverted by our likes and dislikes. So we are not seeing things purely. But here, because of with the absence of the defilements, absence of all the hindrances, your mind is completely still, because our mind cannot be still because of the defilements. We get pulled in. So that's why when absent of the defilements, absent of the five hindrances, your mind is completely, you know, still, very, very bright. Then you be able to see the reality, to see things as they really are. Because if we don't have that powerful mind, we cannot understand. Maybe we think that we understand what is noble truth, we don't. We only, what we understand is only the concept, noble truth, but we don't truly see it. So unless we develop that kind of mind state, then only we'll be able to penetrate through the four noble truths. So that's why, even though here they didn't mention that, doesn't mean that once you attain jhana, then, and some people might argue, you know, you see in this book, you know, the Buddha said, you know, you see, you're enlightened already, you see, no need to insight, you know, a jhana is enough. No. It's just sometimes this is how, because in these suttas, they mainly focus on that when someone have limita state, have at the limita state, when the limita appear, how they going to deal with the very refined, subtle hindrances and take them into jhana. So that's why they didn't mention that, you know, doesn't mean that no need to have insight. So, but we need to have jhana. It's just like in the Dhammapada, the Buddha mentioned, no insight without jhana, no jhana without insight. That means you have to have small insight to accomplish big insight. That means you need to have small insight, you know, to have jhanas. So you need to have jhanas to accomplish the big insight. So that's why lots of people try to separate, you know. Even you develop samadhi, you do have insight. You know, there's always together. So that is what the Blessed One said. The Venerable Anuruddha was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Okay, it's finished. So it's enlightened. So any questions or comments?
I've heard it say that if you use concentration to meditate, you won't go anywhere, because it should be about letting go and not concentrating.
Actually, the because they use the translation concentration, actually is more like the stillness. When your mind becomes still, the stillness comes from letting go. But because of the translation, they say concentration. Actually, it's not the kind of concentration like we concentrate in now. Actually, it's come from, because of letting go, because come from the wisdom, our mind become still. Actually, that's why I personally also agree with what Ajahn Brahm said. Actually, stillness is more the more like, I also agree with Ajahn Brahm. I also prefer stillness. Actually, come from the stillness. Your mind becomes still. It's not a concentration like, you know, like those like athletes, you know, sportmen, they have to concentrate. Actually, it's not that kind of concentration. But sometimes because of the translation, because sometimes like from one language to another, sometimes you can't find, you can only find a close enough words to translate, you know. That's the problem. But actually, that's why I agree with Ajahn Brahm, he said stillness actually come from the stillness, when the mind becomes still. Okay? Is it answer your question? Laura, US, how does one deal with constant attraction to the company of those who one do not find harmony in ideas and in their constant conflict leading to unhappiness? So the only way is that not to associate with them, isn't it? And you cannot change them. And sometimes it's difficult to, but we, like for example, sometimes like when I give advice to people, like you don't associate with the person, you know, that is not a good friend, that have a lot of very negative, you know, doesn't mean that you have to be nasty to them, isn't it? You know, like some people say, oh, how come you know the person, you know, like why you so good to? I say it's different. You don't associate with the person doesn't mean that you have to be nasty to them. You're kind to them, isn't it? Still kind, you know. If they need help, you still help. But you just have to, you just like the beginning, the Buddha's already mentioned, you see, if you have company like that, you better off not to have any friends if it's not a good friends, isn't it? You're rather alone. So that's why I used to tell people, make yourself your best friend, isn't it? Ultimately, you know, you yourself be your own best friend. So because, you know, at the end of our life, you know, we are the one. Even our friend cannot hold our one hand, you know, move on to the next life. Actually, we ourselves, you know, we have to put up with ourselves. So we make friends, you know, we become our own good friends. So any more questions or comments?
Hello.
Okay, cool. We hear you.
All right. I do have a question on just energy, and when you have low energy, how do the nuns practice generating energy? Because when it feels like you have to say to let go, at that point you kind of pass out. Mm-hmm. So what's the work on like maintaining focus, maintaining when you're meditating and just not going beyond the point and fall asleep?
Okay. Basically, I have mentioned, but now I repeat again. So like for example, the practice actually is throughout the day. So like throughout the day, you try to, when you work, you know, you just try to fully attend, you know. And then, of course, like sometimes when you have, like yesterday I talked about to remove the distract, removal of distract thoughts, you know, like when we have unwholesome thoughts, we have those skills and, you know, remove that, replace the thoughts, you know. And actually, those energies come from The letting go actually is a training from a coarser to more refined level. That's why you have the four foundation stone to the path of enlightenment. That is, we include dana. Dana is giving, giving, because the main the cause of our existence is because of we crave, we want. So whenever we want, we crave, the mind move, you know. So and then when we crave, actually you use up lots of mental energy. So when we give, actually we have more. When this is when we giving, actually is a positive emotion. So when you have the positive emotion, actually when you feel happy, you feel the energy, isn't it? Then when we give dana, we offer, we give away. So that's why we train ourselves from a coarser level to more refined level, like give away things. For example, how come we let go of the more refined, like just now we talked about all those is very refined hindrances. So we have to start with coarser, you know, like not be selfish, you know, let go. So we be of, like for example, for nuns, we be of service. So we living in the keeping the precept and living in the monastery. The fact that we keep a place like that, actually we've been of service as well, and then to provide a place for people to come to offer dana. Actually, this is also giving, but it's a different form of giving. So you let go. So when you give, you feel happy, isn't it? You have lots of joy. This is how we generate energy. So when you crave for something, actually, you are draining energy. So when we crave for something, yes, we want something, eventually we got it, you know. So only that moment are we happy. But the kind of happiness, you know, if we follow our sensual desires, wanting this and that, and the kind of happiness, the Buddhists never denied that the happiness come from the senses, but this kind of happiness actually is draining, because it's like borrow, because it's used up lots of mental energy. But the energy come from like offer dana or listening to a talks, you know, and that you feel inspired, you feel happy, and this is how you generate the happiness itself. It's an energy. Like for example, when someone have no energy, they feel very down, and they have sadness, and they have depression. So when you do something good, so you have lots of, you feel good, you have lots of energy, isn't it? The happiness actually, that is the energy. Because it's not draining the energy. So that's why the Buddhists talk about wholesome happiness and unwholesome happiness. Unwholesome happiness is come from getting things, you know, indulge in our sensory pleasure, you know, they use up lots, that draining energy. But the wholesome energy, the Buddhists mentioned, is the energy come from, you know, the happiness come from. The Buddhists also mentioned that the wholesome happiness and unwholesome happiness. The wholesome happiness, that is the happiness come from dana, come from helping someone. And then the happiness come from listening to our talks to get inspired, or the happiness come from meditation. And this kind of happiness, they lead you to peace. But the other kind of happiness, the unwholesome happiness, for example, like happiness of getting things, you know, that lead to like more suffering. You want more and more and more. You can never stop. The only way to stop, the only way, you know, that is to stop the suffering, you know, that is stop one thing. So the craving, actually, the second noble truth, actually, is the cause of the suffering because of the craving. We keep wanting. So when we want, the mind move. So when we give, actually, next time when you give something, when you do something good, you pay attention to your body, you can feel that is a different. When you give, you feel your body relax, isn't it? You feel, when you crave, you feel your whole body very tight. It's just now, just I already mentioned, when you hold on to things, you use up lots of energy. It's very tight, so it's draining. So when you give, actually you relax, and then you feel happy. When you're happy, that is the energy. You know, when you do something good, you are very happy. You have lots of energy. So that's answer your question.
Yes, thank you very much.
Because wherever there is unwholesome emotion, they use up energy. So that's why you develop this wholesome emotion, you know, that when you have this positive emotion, you accumulate energy, you have lots of energy. So that's why actually people think that when the Buddha taught this Four Noble Truths, people think that you're born to suffer, you have to suffer. It's not. Actually, we suffer because we don't understand suffering. That's why the first Noble Truth has to be fully understood. So actually, it's a happy path. So only happy mind can do it. If people are miserable, it's difficult. If you're too miserable, very difficult to focus, very difficult to meditate. Actually, this is a happy path. It's not that you have to suffer in order to get enlightened. Okay. Okay. One more question.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused about this Sutta. It sort of starts off with the Sangha not living in harmony, and then it sort of goes to Anabuddha.
Oh.
Where they are living in harmony, and then sort of goes on to the
meditation. Okay. Actually, because the Buddha, that's what happening, then the Buddha have to leave. But that's why, and then when he go to Anuruddha, and then they ask how you live, but they live in harmony. That's why, if you not be able to live in harmony, you not even started yet your practice. That is the most basic. If you're not able to live harmoniously together, you're not started yet your practice. That is the most basic foundation. Because of, actually, there is some related to. That's why he asked how your practice, how your meditation, because they live harmoniously together and they maintain their mindfulness, they don't talk so much, and they do, and then, you know, they care for each other, love, they're caring for each other, having, you know, a thoughts of loving kindness, you know, and then look at each other's kindly eyes, you know. And actually, it's important, these qualities actually to support your mind. Imagine if you're negative, very difficult to be focused, isn't it? Anger, you know, like, for example, someone said something negative to you, or you get upset with someone, you try to meditate, you can't meditate. So that's why it's so important how you live your life. So sometimes people think that only if I can focus enough, you know, sit in meditation, you my willpower, then I can get enlightened. You cannot. So how you live your life is important. It's part of the practice. You know. You know, that's why sometimes people talk about non-self and then they're so selfish, you know, they can't even let go and they talk about non-self, you know. That's why sometimes people, that's why sometimes we have to go back to, at least you have to start with the basic. But some people are not realistic, you know, they want high dharma, you know, they can't even do the basic. Can't even live harmoniously with maybe with the fellow monastic. So how to become peaceful, how to meditate, you know. Does that answer? Does it make sense to you answer the question?
Yes, I'm just wondering what happened to the monks at Kasami though.
And then later, you know what happened? Because of the lay people get fed up with the monks, they don't feed them. So that's why if the monks or nuns naughty, you don't feed them. Then they know, then they don't not be naughty. Then after that, they realize it when the lay people don't feed them. Then they go and call the Buddha and ask the Buddha to come back. And that's why if the monks and nuns naughty, you don't feed them. So any more questions or comments? Yeah, two more.
When you were talking about light and form, what was it meant by the form?
Actually, he said that, for example, when you see the limita, when he said lights and form, that actually he said the form, you see the lights in the you see the form, it's in your mind, in the form of light. The limita is still a form, but it's in the form of light. Like, for example, some people see limita very big. That is the limita.
Okay. Could you please speak about vitaka and vichara?
Huh?
Vitaka and vichara.
I can't hear.
Vitaka and vichara.
Vitaka and vichara. That vitaka, actually they talk about the apply and sustain. So that's why your mind, that's why your doubt, you have no doubts, you'll be able to really apply your mind. That's why the five hindrances, the fifth one is the first one. When the five hindrances, abandoned, actually you replace by the five jhana factors. So the fifth hindrances actually replaced by the first jhana factors. That is the doubt replaced by apply. You be able to apply in the mind, and then the fourth hindrances actually you replace by the first jhana factors, that is you be able to sustain, because you restless, you cannot sustain. Okay, so answer your question.
Yes.
Any more questions or comments? Okay. So, and
Arahang sama sambuto bhagawa Bhutang bhagawantam abhiwade Swakato bhagavata tamo dhammang namaswam Supatipanom bhagavato sawakasanko Sankam Namah.